Whenever I get to Parshas Noach, I always feel bad. The Noach story is such a very, very sad one. And I think that if we look through Chumash, it's really the one which hurts very, very, very badly. Because it started out with such a wonderful, wonderful promise. Noach motzochein be'enei Hashem. And then Ribbono Shalom selects him to continue humanity after the Mabul, trusts him for 120 years to build the table. It gives him the nisyonos and the opportunities of unmeasurable chesed during the time that he was in the table. He was, must have been such a wonderful, wonderful person. And then the final look, the final glance we throw back at Noach is when we see him dead drunk, naked, lying in his tent, and being mevuzah in front of his children. It's such a sad story. There's so much greatness and goodness which ends up in such a very, very ugly kind of scene. It is very, very sad. The question we have to ask ourselves is, how did this happen? Why was it that all this promise ended up in such tragedy? Now, I think that we have the answer in the very first pasuk in Parshas Noach. Let's read it, and let's make sure to make the stops at the right places. Eile toldas Noach. Noach ish tzadik, tomim hoyo bedorosav, eso elokim hesalech Noach. It's not tzadik tomim. It's Noach ish tzadik. Doesn't say that he was a complete tzadik. It says Noach ish tzadik. Noach was a tzaddik. And moreover, Tomim hayo b'dayrosav, in his dayros, in his generations, he was a Tomim. Tomim, tam means complete. Tomim, he was wholly good, perhaps. But you have to know exactly what is the phrase trying to tell us. Tomim hayo b'dayrosav. Why not simply, just like Noach ish tzaddik, Tomim hayo? Why the stress on b'dayrosav? Now, I think that it's on the basis of this word that Chazal take their hint to make a comparison between Noach and Avraham. We never find that, really. Where do we find Chazal comparing people to one another? He was a greater tzaddik, he was a less good tzaddik. Why are we interested in comparing people? But I think that the phrase Tomim hayo b'dorosav actually directs us into that comparison. Why? Because by Avraham Avinu, when the mitzvah of Bris Mila came along, it says, Hishalech lefonai veheyeh somim. One Shem told Avraham, become Tomim. So really we see that Tomim is what Avraham became as a result of the mitzvah of Mila. There you could understand it as a peace plan between the guf and the neshama. Once there's the bris mila, so the guf is less of a guf. Whatever the tomim over there means, but it seems to be connected with the mitzvah of mila. So the Chazal were faced with this problem. So what does the Torah mean when it says that Noach was tomim? Oh, so the answer came: tomim haya b'dayrosav. Now what that really means is that the word Tomim by Noach meant something other than the word Tomim by Avraham Avinu. Noach was Tomim as that word was defined in the Doiroisov, in his generations, and the mitzvah to Avraham to become Tomim was, doesn't say the word, but Doiroisov over there, was in Avraham's generation. Now, wherein lies the difference? What is the difference between the generation of Lot and the generation of Avraham? So for that we have the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Gemara says, Shisha Alfa Shanin Hava Alma, that the world consists of 6,000 years, Shnei Alofim Toihu, 2,000 years of chaos, Shnei Alofim Toira, and Shnei Alofim Yumois HaMashiach. So now we have the first 2,000 years and the second 2,000 years of history, we have them defined respectively as Shnois Toihu and Shnois Toira. Now, what is the difference between the Shnois Toihu and the Shnois Toira? The Emes, we can get a good idea of what all this involves when we think about the Maral. The Maral, in his Perush on Pirkei Avos, he tackles a question and he asks, how come that the 20 generations between Adam and Avraham, you know, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Asor Adaros, Me Adam Vad Noach, and they were all Machisim, and then Asor Adaros from Noach till Avraham, and they were all Machisim. The Maral wants to know, how come that these 20 generations, these generations before Avraham came along, were all such failures? The word tzaddikim there was Chanoch, there was Mr. Shelach, there was Noach himself, but they were few and far between. But as a generation, as a community, mankind failed very dismally during the Shnois Toihu. How come that during the Shnois Toihu there were so many failures, and then when it came to Avraham, the Shnois Toira, things became much, much better? So the Maral explains very, very fundamentally a very basic difference between the Shnois Toihu before there was any Torah and the Shnois Toira when the Torah came along. Because what is the function of Torah? What do Torah and mitzvahs give to us now that we have the Torah? And let's say during the 2,000 years which were called Shnois Torah. So we know what mitzvahs do to us. Say by every time we do a mitzvah, we say, Asher kidushonu b'mitzvosav v'tzivonu, that somehow the practice of the mitzvah sanctifies us. Asher kidushonu b'mitzvosav, you made us holy through the mitzvahs that you gave us. Now, what is implied in becoming holy? What exactly becomes holy? What is miskadesh when we do mitzvahs? Well, the mitzvahs go through the guf. So what becomes holy, what becomes sacred, is the guf. And what that means is that the clash between the neshama and the guf becomes softened. That the guf is not a 100% adversary anymore. The neshama makes inroads into the guf. That means that the conquest of the neshama over the guf is a matter of sublimation. It's not a matter of victory. It's not that the neshama smashes the guf into submission. No, the neshama invites the guf to join it. That the guf itself, through the bris milah and through the mitzvahs of the Torah, asher kidushonu b'mitzvosav, the guf is won over to the tzad of the neshama. Not through victory, but through sublimation. But in the Shnois Toihu, there was no Torah. So there was nothing to sublimate the physicality of the people. And therefore, whatever struggles there were a head-on struggle between the physicality of the guf and the spirituality of the neshama. It was 100% against 100%. It was a battle to the death between guf and neshama. And the fact is that in our physical world, the guf tends to be very, very much stronger than the neshama. There's a famous Chovas Halvavos. Chovas Halvavos asks, why was it taka necessary for the Torah to give us all the mitzvahs? Why doesn't the Torah just say, be good, and we can figure out what's good and what's not good? So he says, no, because in a head-on clash between the physicality and the spirituality, in our physical world, the physical has advantages against which the neshama can hardly struggle. He reckons out three advantages. Number one, the physical never rests. When we sleep, our bodies continue working. The stomach continues digesting, the lungs continue breathing, and so on. So the ruchnis of a person, while we're asleep, is quiescent. It's not doing anything. But the physical is constantly flexing its muscles. Then the fact is that the physicality starts by a person with a moment of birth. Masha'enken, the ruchnias, the kedusha of a person, comes only with maturity when he's bar mitzvah. So the physicality has an enormous head start over the spiritual part of the person. Then the third thing is that the physical world keeps on supporting the guf, because everything that happens in this world is physical. So since everything that the person observes, everything that the person experiences is physical in this physical world, so that gives an enormous kayach to the physical and to the detriment of the spiritual. So what Maharal says is that in a head-on fight between guf and neshama, the guf has enormous advantages and tends to win. Therefore, in the Shnois Toihu, when there was no Torah to act in any way of sublimation, so there the physical tended to win, and therefore all the Doiros between Adam and Noach, and then between Noach and Avram, were Mach'isim Lefonav. Mashenken after Avram in the Shnois Torah, so it wasn't anymore a head-on collision, because the guf was sublimated with its contact to Torah and to mitzvahs. And therefore, it wasn't a question of victory, but it was a question of joining forces. So, that is the difference between Noach and Avram. Therefore, when the Torah was told Avram by the Bris Milah, Hisalech lefonai veheyeh somim, the tmimus which the Torah was referring to was the tmimus that there shouldn't be a fight between the physical and the spiritual. And fakert, with the mila at status, with the dinner bris mila at status, and then with all the mitzvahs of the Torah, gradually the guf would be won over. And that would be the tmimus, the wholeness, the perfection of life in the Shnois Torah would be a point not where the spiritual wins over the physical, but when it wins him over, when he sublimates it, and when the guf joins forces with the neshama. Now, the tmimus of Noach, tomim hoyo b'doyrosav, he was a tomim even during his doyros, that means even during the doyros of the Shnois Toihu, when there was no sublimation, and therefore tmimus had to be victory. Compare it best to a wrestler who wins his wrestling fight, and he lies on top of his opponent and holds him down on the floor. That was the tmimus of the Shnois Toihu. And the big chiddush of Noach was that even in the Shnois Toihu, he achieved tmimus as tmimus was rated or defined during the Shnois Toihu. Now, what is the difference between the tmimus of Avraham and the tmimus of Noach? What is the difference between a great tzaddik in the Shnois Toihu and a great tzaddik in the Yomais of Toihu? So the answer, of course, is as follows. The question is, what happens if your Messiah does, if you forget for a moment that you're in a struggle? So in the Shnois Toihu, where the guf ceases to become an enemy, and on the contrary, it joins forces with the neshama. So even if the spiritual part of the person is Messiah does for a few minutes, and not as much positive is happening as could be happening theoretically, but it's not a tragedy. But if you think of our moshel of the two wrestlers, if the wrestler who's sitting on top of the person lets go for a moment because he's thinking of something else, he lets his mind wander, and he stops holding, then the guy slips right out from under him, and he can become the victor. That is what happened when Noach was Vayochel Noach Isho Adoma Vayitakerem. He remained an Isho Adoma, except that his neshama conquered the Adoma instincts in him. Yeah, but Vayitakerem, then he decided to drink wine. And that was a Hesach Hadas. And that is really the answer to what I asked before. Like, why is it that Noach ended up in such a horrible, horrible situation after such beautiful promise at the beginning of his history? And the answer is because there was this Hesach Hadas. You can't afford, if you are a victor, if you are a sublimator, you can afford a certain degree of Hesach Hadas. But if you are a victor, then you cannot afford even a small Hesach Hadas. The truth is that I always felt, I don't know whether it's even right to say that, but I've said it to Bochum and Yeshiva, that I'm sure that if I would have been in Noach's footsteps, I would also have have planted a vineyard. Can you imagine how Noach felt when he came out of the Teva? We know from people who never went through the Holocaust, but who, Baruch Hashem, were saved and came out with their lives intact. We know that many of them suffered terrible guilt pangs. Why should I have been saved when so many people whom I consider better than myself, more worthy than myself, had to die? Lonesomeness, being the sole survivor from a terrible Holocaust, is something which is very, very depressing. And you can just imagine Noach coming out of the Teva. Everything is quiet. There's no birds are chirping, no animals are, nothing, no people. He must have had some friends among the people who were alive before the Mabul. They weren't all total Roshoim. It stands to reason that there must have been some decent people. Maybe he liked his dentist, maybe he got on well with the barber, with the mailman. These must have been nice people, or could have been, I imagine. And they were all gone. Everything was dead, 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 dead. The whole world was one big graveyard. And he comes with his tiny little family, and he stands there totally alone. I could imagine that such a person needed the yain yisamach levav enosh, that such a person would need that the wine should somehow be mechayeh him a little bit. It's understandable that Noach planted the wine. He wasn't a shikar, rachmana litzlan, Noach. Yeah? But I assume he needed it. He needed it when he came out of the Teva. That's what he needed. He needed to somehow, some of us know how it feels. Sometimes we have Yom Tov, and we have Simchas Torah, we just passed Simchas Torah, and everybody wants to be happy with the Torah. And some of us find our happiness at least helped along by a bottle. It's not so easy to be happy all the time. And certainly when you're in such a depressing situation, where you come into a world which has turned into a graveyard. So he planted the wine. But it was a Hesach Hadas, and Bibchinas Hesach Hadas, it was totally hopeless. And that moment of Hesach Hadas allowed the physical to slip out from under the brawn of Noach's victory. And that's what happened. And that is why we have this sad, sad picture of Noach. And that is the last picture we see of Noach. The Noach whom we see, the Noach who rests in our memory, is the Noach lying in his tent. Uncovered, shikar. Ugh, it's terrible. It's a very, very sad thing. But it's a very strong lesson of how those of us who are not claiming for themselves, who cannot claim for themselves, that they are particularly sublimated, and therefore their victories are victories of brawn rather than of sublimation, that we can learn from here that we can't be Messiah Das, and that a Hesach Hadas can be very, very dangerous, can be lethal. So Noach, the story of Noach ends where it ends. There's nothing we can do about it. And then we have the continuation of mankind, because Noach did his job. He allowed mankind to have a hemshech, and we have Shem Cham and Yofes. Now, Cham, we know who Cham was. He was the one who saw Noach, and he, according to Chazal, either he was mesares him, he castrated him, or he was mezane. It was a horrible Cham. So who was left? Left was Shem and Yofes. And Shem and Yofes, realizing the disgraceful way in which Noah was lying in his tent, took this blanket, put it on their shoulders in order to enter the room backwards, and covered their father. And for that they were both rewarded in the end. But first we have a little problem. We have a problem of dikduk. Because the pasuk says, Vayikach Shem v'Yofes es ha-simla, that Shem and Yofes took the simla. Now those of you who know your dikduk know that the verb over here is in the singular. It should be in the plural. When two people take something, it shouldn't be Vayikach Shem v'Yofes es ha-simla. It should be Vayikhu, they took. So why do we have over here the singular? Vayikar Shem Vayofes as a similar. So Maral explains that of the two people, whenever you have a singular verb describing an action done by one or more people, it means that the person immediately after the verb, he was the initiator, and the other one just tagged along. For example, over here, Vayikach Shem Vayofes is really Vayikach Shem, Shem took, Vayofes, and Yofes tagged along. That is what it means over here. So what we have is that Shem is the initiator of this very, very good deed, and Yofes tags along. Emes is that we can understand, I believe very strongly, that that is the pshuta shel mikra of the brocha which Noach, when he woke up, gave to Yofes. What did he say? He said, Yaft Elokim leYofes v'yishkan be'or leShem. Exactly what was that brocha? What did he mean by that brocha? I think that what it means is this, that Yofes is a person, the Shem and Cham, they are the two extremes. The Maral says in the Gur Aryeh that the three sons of Noach are the equivalent of the three sons of Adam HaRishon. It stands to reason because Adam HaRishon was the father of a world, and now Noach was to be a father of a new world. So they had the same three sons. That Shem is the equivalent of Shes, and Cham is the equivalent of Kayan, and Yofes is the equivalent of Hevel. Hevel is a sort of a neutrality. It's not, it doesn't stand for a personal shitter. Shem has a shitter. Shes, to put, to place, to define. Chom has a shitter. Kayan. But Hevel and Yofes, they're sort of, they're there, and they are ready to follow whoever persuades them to follow them. See, in this case, Shem had the initiative. Shem was the initiator, and Yofes tagged along. If Chum would have gotten hold of him first, maybe he would have followed Chum. I have a theory about history, that one aspect of history is the story of Yofes, when he allowed himself to be persuaded by the evil in the world, and sometimes he persuaded himself to be allowed by the good in the world. Koyrosh, Melech Modai, he allowed Yidden to come back and build the Beis HaMikdash. Antiochus, Greece, he allowed himself to be dragged to the Tzadat Tumah. It's always Yofes, sometimes with him, sometimes with him. The Purim story tells the story of Ahasuerush. First he was under the sway of Muhammad, then he was under the sway of Mordechai. That's what Yofes is. Yofes, he you can get him this way, you can get him that way. So, Vayikar Shem Vayofes is similar. I think that that is what Noach meant when he gave Yofes the bracha. What did he say? Yaft Elokim leYofes v'yishkan be'or leShem. Now, Yaft, Pesi, means something which is widespread. And widespread, the Tanakh is used in the sense of standing firmly. Tarchiv tza'adai tachtoi v'loi mu'adu kasuloi. Make wide my steps so that I don't fall down. When a person wants to have good, strong balance, he widens his feet. So Yaft Elokim leYofes, Noach said, the Yishkain be'or leShem. He told Yofes, listen, my kind, I know who you are. I know exactly who you are. You're very easily swayed. I want to tell you something. This time you chose well. This time you chose well. You went with Shem. Listen to my bracha. Stand with your feet spread out, strong, firm. Don't let yourself be pushed away. The Yishkan b'Ol Hashem. Make your mishkan, make your remaining in the Ol Hashem. Don't ever allow Chum to get a hold of you. Of course, in many ways, Chum did get a hold of Yofes during the all our history. Today, where we see that there's such horrible filth in the culture, Yofes is Yovan, is aesthetics, is the beauty of music, the beauty of the of painting, the beauty of culture, of what do you call those people? who make three-dimensional figures. Oh, I'm forgetting my words. Sculptor. This is the beauty of sculpture, the beauty of writing, literature. It's all so filthy today, and all so... It's all chum. That means that Yofes has gone over and has allowed chum to drag him into his field. That the beauty today has become disgusting because chum is pulling the strings of Yofes. It's an interesting story, this whole thing. But let's think for a moment, and then we'll finish the shiur, the rewards which shame and Yofes got, because that really ties in very much to the first part of the shiur where we discussed Noach of the Shnois Toihu relative to Avroam of the Shnois Toivo. Because Chazal tells us, Rashi brings it, that the rewards which they got was that shame was rewarded with tzitzis, and Yofes was rewarded with kvura. So the Maral explains, kvura is the body, tzitzis is the neshama. So Maral explains that the initiating force, the body, is always quiescent, the body is always neutral. It's the neshama, the ruach of the person that decides what the body should do. If it persuades him to carry him to the Beis HaMedrash, he'll carry him to the Beis HaMedrash. If he tells him to go take him someplace else, take him someplace else, as I does. So the pshat is like this. So Yofes, who did not have the initiative, who just tagged along, so he was Mr. Guf, and Mr. Guf, the biggest covet for Mr. Guf is his burial. And that's why that's a Pasha in Yecheskel, that by the Mechemes Gog u'Magog, where all the armies of Gog u'Magog are going to be from Yofes, that's a different story, and we can't go into it now, but it's very, very interesting. But there, the Pasuk says that there's going to be this enormous victory, Vizkadilti, Vizkadishti, that's going to be the final victory over the Goyim, and there are going to be hundreds of thousands of dead bodies lying around in Eretz Yisrael. For 7 months, the Yidden are going to go around burying those bodies. So the fact that they were going to be buried and not let to lie around disgustingly on the ground, that was Yofes' reward. Magog is one of the Yofes families. Gog Melech Magog, the king of Magog. Magog is Yofes. So Yofes was rewarded that in Achas HaYomim his people will be buried. That was a schar to the Guf. But shame is rewarded with tzitzis, because he is the initiator. Now what I want to tell you very quickly is that I think that shame is regarded as belonging already into the Shnois Toiva. Fact is that he was Malkit Tzedek Melech Sholem, who Koyen Le'el Elyon, that was Shem Ben Noach, Chazal tell us. He functioned in the Shnois Toiva. Had a yeshiva, the yeshiva of Shem Be'Ever. What is tzitzis? Very, very briefly. Now I want to put in a warning that what I'm going to tell you now is just, I think, the result of my own thinking. At one time I thought that I saw it in the Maharal, and also that I saw part of it in the Sham Shavuel Hirsch, but then I looked and I didn't really see it. So I think what I'm going to say now is sort of something which I sort of cobbled together from various things that I'd seen. But I think that there may be a lot of emes to that. And that is this. What is the idea of tzitzis? I mean, that much I think the Maharal does say. That the idea of tzitzis, really tzitz, that Hirsch also says, tzitz hasote, that grows out. What does that mean? It means like this. There's nothing which is more mukbal, there's nothing which is more bounded than a four-cornered something. You have a square, you have an oblong, and there are the corners and the sides, everything is straight and forbidding, up to here and not beyond. The boundaries of something which bounds a person within it very, very strictly, up kan, the suloi, up to here and not further, that is a square. A square is very much a bounded area. That's what a square is. And the corners are very forbidding. They say, you can't go beyond here. What did the Ribbono Shel Olam say? Ribbono Shel Olam said, put tzitzis on the corners. Tzitz hasode. The tzitzis laughed their head off. The tzitzis said, what do you mean I can't go beyond here? Of course I can go beyond here. On the very corner where the where the gevulim, where the boundaries are the most forbidding, at that very corner, the Rabbanim says, put the tzitzis, and let the tzitzis go way, way, way beyond the forbidding lines of the square. And that is what tzitzis are. And I think that is the pitaron, the interpretation of the story, the famous story, in the Morim Menachos, I think, where this person, he saved up for a long, long time to be able to travel to a certain Zaina, and he got there finally, after all those expenses, and he was there with her, and he was about to approach her, so his tzitzis came and slapped him in the face, and he was poilish, and he didn't do it. I think that what the Gemara means over there is like this. This person was totally imprisoned by his tivus. And he'd saved up for years only in order to travel over the seas to come to this particular Zaina. All the money, his whole life he had dedicated to this one moment of what he wanted to do. So if somebody would have told him, you know, your uncle, it's not a good idea. He would have said, I can't help it. I'm completely a prisoner of my own typhus. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm not strong enough. I can't do that. I can't stop now after all this. So his tzitzis came and slapped him in the face. And the tzitzis said, don't be silly. That's what we are. We tell you that even when you think that there's no way in the world that you can go beyond this, the fact is that you can go very, very well beyond it. And the fact is there's nothing which will ever stand in your way. If you have enough oomph to try and to do it, you will be able to go beyond that which you had considered to be boundaries. And the emes is that what we have over here, the chom, the yofes and shame, is really the same as the Avrom and the Noach, and that is why I thought that the two sugyas belong together. That Avrom is the Shnois Teure, when it's possible to have growth, when it's possible to have development. Why? Because you can sublimate. If all you can do is to smash the koichos of physicality, so then you're not going to get very far. You have conquered them, and you have shackled them, but that's it. But if you can sublimate, so then the guf itself is capable of going distances which at other times he might have thought were totally impossible. Those are the tzitzis which shame was able to earn through initiating the protection of the covert of Noach. And Yofes was okay. He was Mr. Guf, and that's about what he was able to do. He was able to tag along with shame. So he got his mitzvah of kvura. His scha of kvura, that's not such a poshta thing. But that is as far as he was able to go. So here we have a little background to the switch of Bereshis and Noach, which are the Shnois Teure, and the Nechlecha, of course, will go to the Shnois Teure.